As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
If you own a vehicle with less than 200,000 miles and have an auto warranty about to expire or no warranty coverage at all, listen up. CarShield has a low-cost, month-to-month vehicle protection plan that covers more parts than ever. Visit carshield.com/audio to find out how you could pay almost nothing for covered auto repairs. Drivers who activate this vehicle protection today will also receive free roadside assistance, free towing, and car rental options at no additional cost. Get your free quote today at carshield.com/audio. That's carshield.com/audio.
Welcome to Success Story. I'm your host, Scott Clary. The Success Story podcast is part of the HubSpot podcast network. They have incredible podcasts, but they also have incredible tools for entrepreneurs. One of my favorite tools that I've used, and yes, I've used HubSpot, even though they're a sponsor, way before they even sponsored the show, is the HubSpot Sales Hub. Because if you are an entrepreneur, your sales software shouldn't be the bane of your existence. When you step inside to your CRM, you should feel equipped to do your best work. Like you're sitting in the pilot seat with easy to use and powerful controls. And that is the magic of HubSpot Sales Hub. They've redesigned their Sales Hub to help you win quarter after quarter, year after year. They have intuitive prospecting tools. They have AI powered tools that reduce your workload. Managing all your leads doesn't feel like endless manual labor. It makes closing deals easy. So you want to get your day-to-day tasks under one platform that makes navigating contacts, calls, emails, social, marketing, sales, analytics very easy. Close more deals and get on track for your best Q1 yet. Learn about HubSpot Sales Hub at HubSpot.com/sales. So I ask everyone the same question. Pick a point in your life that was very impactful. So it could have been growing up. It could have been a business experience. Could have been an experience with your parents, whatever. Could have been something different. But what's that one thing that you think to that sort of sets you on the path that you're on today?
So, you know, it's hard to answer that question without immediately going to December 7th of 2006, which is my sobriety date. And that's the date where one chapter, one version of Eric stopped, ceased to exist, and a new one started. Although I had no idea that's what was happening at the time. And so what that day looked like was, it was messy. You know, I was at the tail end of desperation of about 7 years of IV drug addiction, heroin, cocaine, amongst other things. I had been homeless. I had gotten out of jail recently. And the night before, in a moment of desperation, I robbed a guy for $82 with a kitchen knife. And I bought four $20 bags of heroin. And that night of the night before, December 6, 2006, I hid in a closet as the entire police department from Portland, Maine, searched the neighborhood for me for that robbery. And I injected my last, God willing, my last four bags of heroin and woke up the next morning and the gig was up. And, you know, God uses what God uses. God uses what God has available. Sometimes it's got a sense of humor. And I firmly believe that he used that situation. He used the Portland, Maine Police Department to separate me from drugs and alcohol. And that was more than 16 years ago. And so I've been consistently in recovery. In a process of trying to be a better guy today than I was yesterday and abstaining from drugs and alcohol since that day.
So When I looked at your story, this is not something that was later on in life. Like, you, this is something that hit you hard, drugs, addiction, like very, very early.
Very
on.
Early.
Is 12, right? Is 12?
I was 10.
10?
10 years old. I'll paint the picture for you. I am a badass little fifth grader with a Discman listening to gangster rap, packing a pellet gun, thinking I'm a OG. And getting big bags of weed fronted from older kids in the neighborhood and selling weed at 10 years old. And, that's when I caught my first pinch. I talk about that a lot, you know, kind of the entrepreneurial bug of selling weed as a 10 year old.
It's one hell of a fucking entrepreneur story.
And, you know, at the time I was drinking beers, I was drinking Mad Dog 2020s, smoking joints.
Yeah.
And, you know, life, I didn't realize it, but it was probably not headed in the best direction. And then I think I was 14 years old, 14, almost 15. The first time I tried an OxyContin, and then 6 months later, I was about 15 years old, almost 16. I became a full blown heroin addict, dropped out of school. And my life consisted of doing drugs, selling drugs, committing crime, hanging out with criminals on the street. Like I was full time.
So when you're
robbing
somebody,
it wasn't like a part time gig for me. It was, you know, I was all in.
Because, like, how do you function then? How do you make money to support living, which is crime and shit like
crime,
that?
That's, sell drugs, robberies.
Yeah,
you know?
Because if you're robbing somebody for $80, like, that's a fucking all time low. And then,
What was funny about the robbing career was like the robbery started like really high ticket. And then they just started getting.
It's like the worst. It's like the opposite.
Yeah.
Dude.
Yeah, I know. I mean, we used to rob drug dealers. I've never actually talked about that.
That sounds like not
much.
A smart idea.
It was a fucking great idea at the time. they don't call the cops.
Oh, that is a smart idea then.
You know what I mean? If you got a bunch of dope, bunch of coke, you know, weed, whatever it is.
Yeah.
You know, they might try to figure it out on the street. That might not end up too well.
That's
but what are they going to do?
Yeah, but they're not going to call the cops on you.
They're not going to call the cops and say, you know, this guy kicked my door in with him and his friends and guns and took my shit.
Yeah.
No police reports. And so, you know, it went from big scores, big deals, making a lot of money, you know, living the high life. And as it went on, it just got more and more desperate and pathetic. And the last, you know, I'd be lying to say that all of my time out there was miserable. I had a great time.
Yeah.
It was like a movie.
No,
it was crazy.
So
but it was at the end that it was just incredibly painful.
So what I never understood is, so you're living this life and you have fun and you're partying and you're getting fucked up all the time. But at what point, and I guess it's not one point, it's like death by a thousand cuts. There's never one point where you start to digress. To go down this shitty rabbit hole, because if you think about it, you're partying, you're drinking, you're doing whatever. If you thought to your future self, robbing a guy for $80, you'd be like, "That's fucking bullshit. That's ridiculous. This is not like a movie life that I want."
Yeah.
So that's sort of like a really good commentary on addiction. It's like, how does it get to that point? I don't think people understand.
It's just a slippery slope.
And I don't think if you haven't gone through it, you don't get it.
For sure. Or seen, you know, if you haven't gone through it yourself, a lot of people love people that have or know people that have been affected by addiction. Yeah. And the one common theme about it is it's often too late before you know it. You know, like I remember the first time I was sick from withdrawals, from opiates, from heroin. And I didn't even know what it was. I thought I had the flu. And then one of my friends came over who had been in the addiction game for longer than I had. And he was like, "How much you been getting high?" I was like, "Every day." He's like, "For how long?" I'm like, "A long time." He said, "When's the last time you got high?" I'm like, "I don't know. Maybe yesterday, the day before, whatever it was." And he was like, "Brother, you're..." And in my head, the reason was I was like, "I got to lay off this shit. I've been doing it a lot. Let me cool it for a little bit." Having no idea that I was about to get physically ill from withdrawals from coming off of heroin. And I was 15 years old. You don't know too much about it then. And then that's when he told me, he was like, "Brother, you're dope sick." I was like, "What's dope sick?" And that was another pivotal moment where that was a defeating blow where it's like, oh, I'm fucked. I'm in a lot of trouble. Like, I don't know if I can stop this. And I got high shortly thereafter and felt great immediately. And I was like, oh, I'm stuck. Like, I'm in a bad spot.
So when you get arrested, and if you didn't get arrested, like, all the cliches are probably true. You're either dead or in jail, or,
yeah,
or, you know, some
version of it. All my friends are. Everyone that was around at that time, you know, from 14 to almost 22 years old, every single person I ran around with is either a couple of them are sober and everyone else is dead or in prison.
So you got arrested for one crime. So you didn't.
I got arrested for a lot of crimes.
What? No, but like at that one point in your life, that one point, when you robbed the guy for $80.
I didn't get arrested for that.
Oh, you did?
I woke up the next morning and went on the run.
Oh, shit.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah. I hid in the closet, did my heroin, and the next morning I woke up, fled the state of Maine, and spent the next year and a half in recovery, sober, getting my life together, also on the run, and with a lot of legal stuff. And then in about a year and a half of sobriety, I went up and cleared up all my legal trouble.
And because you're sober, you want to like change your life at this point. You're like, this is like rock bottom. So you didn't, it wasn't like the system that forced you to get sober. That point, you took it on yourself though.
Yeah.
Okay.
Situationally, what was funny about that day, December 7th of 2006, my sobriety date, was I think that for the first time, maybe ever or in a long time, I was able to see myself and my life and where it was going for what it actually was.
So just got clarity.
Like, I had 20/20 vision clarity that day. And I was like, I need to get sober right now, not tomorrow, not next week, not next month, not next year, right now, mm-hmm. or I'm fucking dead, or I'm going to prison. And so that's what I did.
So when you're sober for a year and a half, how do you clean up all this legal trouble? How do you, because that's weighing on you too. And I know that, I mean, sometimes I don't think the legal system really helps people that are in the spot that you were in. So, you know, if you are addicted and you're trying to make your life better, then what if they throw you in jail or whatnot? That's not gonna support anything good. It usually increases rates of recidivism. It increases addiction, increases like small crime, whatever. So how did you navigate that? Because that was something that obviously was weighing on you for a year and a half so that you could actually go and build a business, have a normal life, whatever.
Yeah. The system itself, people don't get well there.
No, I know they
don't. As a design of the system. What happened was I got involved in recovery, in 12-step recovery, and it was really my first introduction to anything that was personal development. Mm-hmm. And I started going through this 12-step recovery process, and part of that process in the step work is a thing that they call making amends. And you make a list of everyone you've ever hurt, ever. And there are a couple rules to it. You know, you don't make amends when it would hurt someone else or, you know, things like that. But despite personal consequences, you go and make these things right. And so I started clicking away at that list. I stole from this person. I hurt this person. I assaulted that person. I broke this person's heart. I cheated on this one. I lied to that one. And I started going and having face-to-face direct conversations with all of these people. This looked like sitting down with ex-girlfriends and owning my side of the street and trying to make this right. This looked like my family. This looked like walking into Walmart and explaining to them that I used to steal and rob from them all the time. I mean, it is an extent to everyone I've ever hurt. Institutions, stores, everything. Hospitals I walked into and, you know, my school, my teachers, you know, I mean, it was a long list. And so in that, you know, one of the very glaring things that I needed to clean up was all my court stuff, was this armed robbery thing. And God, you know, I'm not particularly a religious guy. I don't go to church, you know, et cetera, things like that. But I firmly believe that God had everything to do with me changing my life and has had his hand on my journey the entire time. And it's funny as hell, but I packed my, at a year and a half sober, I was like, I gotta go. This thing's weighing on me.
Yeah, I know.
Dude,
yeah.
I'm like getting pulled over, like in friends' cars, going to AA meetings,
yeah,
getting out and running. Like, because I got a warrant. I'm like, if I get pinched on this warrant, I'm fucked. And so I'm like jumping fences, getting chased by cops, 6 months sober. Like, I'm like, I gotta.
You can't live. You can't live.
Can't live like that. Yeah. Can't move on with my life.
Yeah.
And so I pack my life up and I prepare to go turn myself in on this. And I go up to back up to Portland, Maine. And it's kind of a long story, but I walk into this courthouse thinking I'm going to prison. Like, I've readied myself spiritually. That if this is what I'm supposed to do, if I'm supposed to go do time, then I have a message of recovery. That's where God wants me. That's where my purpose for however long they send me there. Yeah. That's what I'm supposed to be doing. I'm willing to accept these consequences. Let's go. I walk into this courthouse. I expect them to like tackle me, you know, and I walk up and I talk to the clerk. This little old lady, and I'm like, I have some warrants and stuff I need to clear up. She's like, oh, you got to go upstairs to this courtroom 5 or whatever it is and see the prosecutor. Go talk to him. I'm like, okay. So I go up there, big wood doors, put my head down, I say a prayer, take a deep breath. I got all this paperwork with me of letters that people wrote me of good things that I've done and in recovery and mm-hmm. all the service work and people have helped and, you know, testimony of I'm a changed guy today. I got my papers. I open the door. I walk in. I start walking right down the middle. I see the prosecutor up at the little desk that he sits at. They're on break. And I'm going to talk to him. And this guy reaches out about halfway down the room. And he's sitting down. And he grabs me by the arm. And I look. And it's this dude, Johnny. Johnny I met at AA.
Get the fuck out.
And I'm looking at him and I'm like, and he's like, Eric? And I'm like, yeah. The only reason I ever fucking talked to Johnny at AA is because he would give me cigarettes. I'm like, you got to, he'd be like, hey, let me talk to you about getting sober. I'd be like, you got a cigarette? Like, that's the only, like, you know. And he was like this older cat. I didn't know anything about him except he was like a nice dude that was always trying to help me and always gave me a cigarette. And he like pushed down. He's like, sit down. And I'm like irritated. I'm like, I'm trying to like get on with going to prison right now. Like, I don't really have time for this shit, Johnny. You know, you've been bothering me for a long time with your bullshit, you know? And he's like, what are you doing? And I tell him, I'm like, dude, I've been sober a year and a half. I got all this stuff going on. I got these letters. I got to go talk to that dude. I got to clean this up. Like, good to see you.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, I'm like, fuck are you doing here? You know what I mean? Like, why are you in court? Yeah. And he's like, Eric, you might not know this, but I'm actually a criminal defense attorney. 12-step rooms are anonymous. So you
really, so you don't know what everyone does.
Oh, you rarely know anyone's last name. Like, you're there because we're all alcoholics and drug addicts. We don't really talk about that stuff too much unless you really get to know somebody. And he says, I've known that prosecutor a long time. Why don't you let me go talk to him? And it was right in that moment I was like, God, you're a funny dude.
God is a funny dude. Yeah.
And long story short, he went and talked to the prosecutor for me. And I had other legal stuff. I had like gotten out of jail with pending cases that I bailed on court dates. And
you had a lot of shit.
Yeah. And dude, they went out and talked. I ended up walking out of there with like $100 fine and suspended time. And I left a free guy. And so I'm like driving back to New Hampshire, like, calling people like, and they're like, you're still out? You know, I'm like, I'm coming home, baby. I'm coming home. You know, but I left my poor dog with my dad. I'm like, Dad, I don't know how
you set yourself
gone.
Up. You're like, I'm going away.
I was set up to go away. And God was good. He's been good.
I love that.
Yeah, it was cool.
I love that. So after this part of your life, you're driving back, obviously, like, new lease on life.
Yeah.
You feel like all this weight's been lifted. You built an amazing business. How did it start?
It started by a passion for helping other people like me. I was for free and for fun volunteering, going into state-funded kind of rundown facilities that were helping addicts and alcoholics. And I would go in there and I would just help them with recovery. because I liked to do it and I was passionate about it, and it helped me to help them.
I know a lot of entrepreneurs listen to this show, and NetSuite has been a huge supporter for entrepreneurs, for business owners, because there's one thing that we all know. Business is about making money, and it's about your bottom line. And the less you spend on the nuts and bolts of running your business, the more profits you keep. But these days, everything is costing more. Supplies, people, shipping. It squeezes your margins, and I've been there, juggling multiple systems for finance, inventory, you name it. Each with its own costs and its own set of headaches. That's why I made the switch to NetSuite by Oracle. It's changed our company. Think about it. NetSuite is one of the top financial systems out there. It puts your whole business on one platform, accounting, finance, the works. One data source for everyone. There's no more mismatched info. And because it's in the cloud, it slashes your IT costs. No more servers, no more updates. Just access NetSuite from anywhere. With one integrated suite, your overhead drops big time. And here's the real win. Efficiency. Everything's connected in NetSuite. Costs are ridiculous lately. Find a proven way to reduce your expenses and get better performance out of your team. It's a no-brainer, and that's what NetSuite offers. Over 37,000 companies have figured this out already. You have to join them. Right now, through to April 15th, NetSuite's got an incredible, flexible financing plan. Check it out and see the savings yourself at netsuite.com/Scott Clary. That's netsuite.com/Scott Clary. Think back to your last few days in the office. Did any of them leave you feeling really accomplished? Not the kind of day where you're running around like crazy, but where you've made real progress on something that matters. Because being busy doesn't always mean being productive. And I bet you we've all been there. And maybe it's time to rethink what it means to get things done. Today's episode is sponsored by Belay. And what they help you do is, instead of getting sucked into emails and to-do lists, they help you delegate tasks and focus on big goals. They can connect you with top-notch US-based talent who are ready to take on those time-consuming tasks that bog you down. Let's be real. There are way more important things you could be doing than bookkeeping or wrangling a packed inbox. They have virtual assistants to handle all of those pesky administrative tasks, or accounting professionals to take care of all your financials. But here's the best part. You don't have to waste weeks searching for the right person. Belay's personalized matching service works quickly, sometimes matching you with the right talent to take stuff off your plate in under a week. Are you ready to try a different way of working? Check out Belay's list of the top 25 things you can delegate to a virtual assistant. It might just change your business and your life. Text SUCCESS, that's SUCCESS, to 55123 to get the list and to start transforming your to-do list with Belay. I don't know about you, but the idea of being harassed, scammed, or even worse, all because somebody found my personal information online, that's terrifying. Our political opinions, our addresses, even stuff about our families, it's out there for anyone to grab. And did you know that data brokers are allowed to sell information on over 98% of Americans? It's scary stuff. That's why I've partnered with Delete Me. I personally use Delete Me. They're a big friend of the podcast because I put myself out there online. So safety is a huge concern. It's really scary how easy it is to find someone's details and information, but Delete Me creates a layer of protection that we all need. You tell Delete Me what you want gone, and they make it disappear from those sketchy data broker sites. And Delete Me doesn't stop. They constantly monitor the web to keep your information off those lists. It's like having a privacy watchdog that never sleeps. You need to take control of your data and keep your private life private by signing up for Delete Me. They're giving a special discount for all Success Story podcast listeners. Get 20% off your Delete Me plan when you go to joindeleteme.com/success and use promo code success at checkout. The only way to get 20% off is to go to joindeleteme.com/success and enter code success at checkout. joindeleteme.com/success.
And while I was there, I was like, these people don't have anywhere to go. And I was like, you know, I'd been all over the place, the halfway houses and sober houses, and the state of New Hampshire didn't have one. And so that was the original thing, was I bought, with a little help from my dad, my first property at 23 years old. And it was a three family that I bought and opened up in October 2008 and opened up the state of New Hampshire's first sober living house. And so for the next 2 years, I had 11 beds. I rented the beds by the week.
Yeah.
And I lived with 11 guys, lived right in the building with them for the next 2 years. And taught them how to be in recovery, taught them the 12-step process, taught them life skills, and, you know,
and
helped them change their life.
It sounds insane that there was nothing before you in New Hampshire. That doesn't make sense to me.
A different time back then. you got to think, like, in 2008, addiction isn't a mainstream issue. It's still very taboo. You would never see it in the news. People would never talk about it. If someone you loved was addicted, it would be a family secret. A lot has changed. Fentanyl, 2012, 2013, the Affordable Care Act, overdose death skyrocketing. All of a sudden, this thing starts building, and the 2016 campaign cycle, so really 14 and then heavily into 15, 2015, it becomes this major front row issue. Addiction in that, in that election cycle in a lot of areas of the country was the number one issue of voters. And so that's when it became mainstream. This is 8 years before that.
You're right. Everything you're saying is spot on. It just still blows my mind that even in 2008, there was so little support.
It was, yeah, it was crazy.
It is. So you built this.
Yeah. And so I had one sober house, and then I always had a waiting list of guys trying to get in that I couldn't help. And so I started a second one. And then once I started a second one, I was like, you know, I need some therapists. Like, I'm doing everything that I can as a man in recovery with lived experience to help these people, but they should have some therapy and they should have some case management.
All the shit that you needed.
100%. Yeah. I got sober on the street. I got sober walking to 12-step meetings, which, you know, I'm grateful for. And so then I opened up an outpatient, and then I opened up this and I opened up that, and I just started to build the business. And by 2015, we were the largest provider of addiction treatment services in the Northeast.
You didn't have business experience. You had a lot of life experience, not a lot of business experience. How'd you navigate that? How did you, you know, you were successful at it, probably screwed up a lot of shit along the way trying to figure it out.
I was not fearful of failure. I would just fail and keep going, learn a lesson and keep moving. I learned how to learn. I think that was the most important thing that I did was, you know, I'm a 15-year-old dropout. I still do not have a GED. Mm-hmm. I've not been in any type of organized education since I was 15 years old. But I learned how to, one, access information, learn the information from books, podcasts, YouTube, mentors, teachers, coaches, anywhere that you can find information. I learned how to access it and learn it, and then take it from a place of holding the information to putting it into practical application. Mm-hmm. And so I wanted to learn about how to interview people.
Yeah.
And so I learned that, and I wanted to learn how to manage people, and I wanted to learn like all these little.
But you also did everything yourself, day one.
All of it.
Include, like, I'm just like, I notice threads in people that are successful, and you know, even day one, you're living in the house that you're building.
Yeah, totally.
And I think people are a little bit lazy now. They don't like
and that's, you know, I do a little bit of the coaching stuff. Yeah. I coach entrepreneurs, and I see a lot of that. The successful ones are the ones that are willing to do what other people aren't willing to do.
Yeah.
But there is a lot of laziness. There's a lot of entitlement.
Yeah.
And people don't understand. Like, they look at me and they see the headlines that, you know, I sold my business for a huge number. You know, I have all this nice stuff that I put on Instagram. What they don't see, what I wish I could post a fucking picture of, is 13 years of 14, 16-hour days without a break, relentless. You know?
Yeah.
And it's like you can't get to – I don't know another path to get to where I've gotten than the path that I took. And the path that I took an immense amount of investment and sacrifice and hard work.
That's a common thread. I don't think – like anybody who's built anything is just a lot of shit for a long period of time and grinding it out. And all the cliches are true.
Yeah.
But you do anything for 10, 12, 13, 14, 15 years nonstop and you end up being successful at it.
Yeah.
There's no fucking luck there. There's no luck at all.
There's no luck. There's no fast pass.
No, I don't think so.
Like, there's no way to be a 10-year guy without being a 10-year guy.
Yeah. I just want to take a quick second and tell you about one more podcast you have to check out if you're a fan of Success Story. It's Sales Evangelist, hosted by Donald Kelly, brought to you by the HubSpot Podcast Network. Each week, Donald interviews the world's best sales experts, successful sellers, sales leaders, and entrepreneurs who share their strategies to succeed in sales right now. He brings on Jeffrey Gittimer, Jill Conrath, Bob Berg, Guy Kawasaki. They share actionable insights and stories that will encourage, challenge, and motivate you to hustle your way to more revenue for your business. If you're somebody who's looking to take off in your sales career, if you are an entrepreneur who's looking to sell more, I think all of us are, go listen to Sales Evangelist wherever you get your podcasts.
Even you who hit an industry that you knew super well and you hit it at the right time.
Yeah.
So all like even the stars aligning on the business that you're building, and even then it's still what it was 13, 14, whatever, 15 plus years of the 14 to 16 hour days.
Yeah.
You have people you go and learn from, mentors, coaches, podcasts, YouTube, whatever the fuck it is. But the point is, like, there's a very simple path to become successful.
That's right.
And I think it's funny how people get so confused about what it takes to actually get from point A to point B. And business is a lot of work, but it's not confusing. I don't find it confusing. I find that when you start here, you can look at the end result and reverse engineer all the steps that it took, and you just got to be willing to put in the work to get there.
That's right.
I firmly believe that. But when you built this out, talk about a really big fuck up or something that you screwed up that was like a very stuck in your head, ingrained lesson that you wish you would have done differently.
God, I'm not having a hard time finding.
No, there's a million.
I'm like having a hard time picking one.
And what I'm trying to do, like, let's be real. Like, you have this awesome business and you see the headlines, but I mean, this whole show is about unpacking all the bullshit that you dealt with on the way there.
Yeah.
Cause that's what people have to realize.
One of the things that's true is that if you want to be good in business, you have to be good with people. Mm-hmm. You know, what is the composition of a business? People, employees, labor, right? And so one of the biggest mistakes that I made was and one of the biggest learning lessons, and one of the things that I'm doing much better today and in more recent times than I used to, is how to build teams, how to manage teams. You know, I was like hiring my friends, hiring people. I'm like, I like this guy. Let's get him an opportunity.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And get lots of giving people opportunities, which is great. And that should be a part of the fabric of your business is, you know, professional growth and opportunity. But I was like putting people in roles that they weren't qualified for, setting that very well intentioned, but I would set myself, the business, and them up for failure.
Yeah.
Because he was a good guy or she was a good girl.
That happens a lot.
It happens a lot. And you don't have
the balls to, but you don't want to fire the person either because you're the one who set them up.
You put them in the position to fail.
I know.
And now you're like, fuck, like I gotta take care of this. And so, you know, that was probably one of the larger pivotal learning moments was how to manage people professionally, how to recruit talent, interview, hire, onboard professionally, how to bring professionals into my business. And the light bulb of if I'm constantly taking people and asking them to do a job that's bigger than what they've ever done before, giving them that opportunity. Mm-hmm. And I have a full team of all of those. Like that probably isn't going to go well, or the quality of what we're doing is not going to be the best.
Yeah.
And so switching that to trying to interview and recruit the people that already have the experience in these roles, you know, at a high level that are bringing a lot to the table, hiring people that have already done these things to help us get to the next level. That big switch was an enormous unlock for the business.
So a lot of hiring people that, I mean, you know, you hire people that are smarter than you.
Yeah.
All the time. So you scale this up. You sell. Walk me through the exit. Like what happened when you're because an entrepreneur first. This is the first business you've ever sold at this point, right?
Yeah.
So it's a big moment. You're thinking about exiting it. Why did you want to exit it then? Was it opportunity? Was it right buyer? Was it you're done with this shit? I want to do something else. What was it?
A little bit of all the above.
Yeah.
I led six processes. The first two blew up in my face. Learned a lot.
By looking for buyers, you're saying?
I had two private equity buyers in 2019. Neither one of those deals closed. I accrued millions of dollars in fees and they did not happen.
Yeah.
I then closed three minority deals, which were very successful. And so I went to the same family office, private equity family office type buyer. And so they took three bites of the business at a growing valuation as it was getting bigger. And then in 2021, I sold 100% of the business to a private equity backed strategic. The process of that, you know, when you look at the first phase of the business, I did everything. All of it. I was like the only guy, right?
Yeah.
The first and only employee. And then the second phase of the business is where a lot of entrepreneurs are and a lot gets stuck, which is I'm the CEO, I'm the founder, I have a team, I have people, I'm running the business. But if I got hit by a bus today, this business would be dead tomorrow, right? Like it has no legacy to it. I can't step away. I own a job. And everything in this business is tied to me.
That's most entrepreneurs.
Most entrepreneurs are there. Those are most of the people that end up in my coaching ecosystem are these people. And I love it because it's working them to that next phase. It was through mentorship and coaching and having amazing teachers in my life that taught me that that was in direct competition with which was the next phase, which was building systems, processes, leadership team, SOPs, all of these things put in place to make it so this business no longer needs me. Mm-hmm. And that's what we established, myself and my partner, after I closed those minority deals, was I built a leadership team. I built systems, processes. I professionalized the business from stem to stern. And for the last almost full year that I owned it prior to the full sale, that business didn't need me at all. I never went there. I didn't walk through the front door of that building for at least 10 months before I sold it.
And that's a good sign that you don't have that key man problem anymore. Yeah,
100%. Yeah, and it affects valuation and it affects your ability to have a complete exit. You know, if they had key man risk with me, they'd be like, you're not going anywhere.
Yeah,
you're coming with us.
Yeah.
And so it's really moving that business through these three phases to an eventual exit. And market conditions.
Did you? But it sounds like you actually did this late. It sounds like you did it late in the game, because I'll ask what your advice is for entrepreneurs. When do you start building up these SOPs, these systems, these processes? Because you started focusing on that after you actually took on partners. But before that point,
it was
right?
Before and after.
They entered
during this process.
So when do you see people get stuck up is what I'm trying to figure
2017,
out.
2017.
Yeah.
I have an exploding business. I'm hiring. I'm growing in top line revenue.
Yeah.
I'm growing in bottom line revenue. I'm growing in headcount. I'm moving, you know, the platform's growing bigger, and it is just chaos. Because I had at one point, I think it was 17 direct reports. Like if you looked at an org chart, it was me
and everyone else,
and then everybody. Like, and they all came to me, and I was like, because again, I don't have an MBA. I don't have like I just was building, and I was like, all right, we need this. I'll hire them, and I'll manage them.
Yeah.
You know, it just. Just kind of happened. And so
your life was chaos.
Total chaos. I was like I couldn't not be on my phone and be there from early to late every single day. Like if I didn't show up for a day, God help everybody.
Yeah.
Like it was going to be a problem. And at that point, that for me was when I was forced into developing this business to a more professionalized organization, developing an org chart. Is that what most people should do? Probably not. Like you should probably, as soon as you kind of awake to the information, that start to implement that as early on as you can, and it'll reduce chaos. And I believe it'll increase speed of growth as well and de-risk the organization.
But you see that like now when you coach entrepreneurs, you see that as one of the major issues they have?
Yeah.
Yeah.
All of them. That's just tends to be the people that end up.
It's really interesting.
Digesting my content and coming into my, you know, coming into my world and making contact somehow is most of them have businesses that need to be professionalized. They've hit a bottleneck. They've hit a plateau. They don't know what's next. They have an amazing business. They're living a great lifestyle.
Yeah.
they own a home, they have, you know, nice cars for them and their family, they go on vacations, they have financial freedom, but a lot of them just don't have freedom of their time and freedom from their business, and they've become a slave to this job that they own.
And it's not like, I don't know what the revenue numbers are for some of these guys. I know some of the guys, but not all of them. But I mean, it's not small businesses. It's not like they're just pulling 200 a year, 300 to 500 a year.
I'm talking top,
like, multi-million dollars.
A lot of these businesses are anywhere between, like, 5 million top line would be the smaller.
Which is actually wild for a key man problem at 5 million bucks. That's a lot of money for one person still running the show.
Top line, yeah. Yeah. But a lot of them are 20, 30, 40 million.
Which is even, all of it's fucking wild. All of it's nuts. Like, none of that should
exist. No doubt.
I'd be stressed as hell if I was responsible fully and didn't have good support on a 30, 40, 50 million dollar business.
And some of them do, and they have a lot of support, but it's like you're in the middle.
Yeah.
And you're getting support, but it's still all leaning on you.
Yeah.
And here's the problem. If is it really all that supportive, or is it if you pull you out of it and it'll collapse?
So you think you have a system, but you don't.
How do you build it upright so you can step away from it and it runs without you?
When you exited your business, I noticed how fast you were able to build an infrastructure to actually support coaching, mentoring, which I thought was interesting because...
Today's show is brought to you by 1Password. Now listen, we all have that one friend who's constantly forgetting passwords and needing help to get into their accounts. I have a solution. It's called 1Password. 1Password is the award-winning password manager trusted by millions of users and companies like IBM and Slack to keep logins, credit cards, and other private info safe in an encrypted vault that only you can access. No more sticky notes with passwords or using the same password everywhere. I've been using 1Password for a year now, and I can't recommend it enough. It saves me time from having to reset passwords and gives me peace of mind knowing my info is secure. With convenient features like automatic password generation and login autofill, 1Password takes the hassle out of passwords. You can use it on all your devices, iOS, Android, Mac, PC. Everything syncs seamlessly. And with top-notch security audits and encryption, your data stays private. So do yourself a favor and check out 1Password today. Go to 1Password.com/Clary and get a 2-week free trial. Let 1Password remember all of your logins for you so you can remember what really matters. That's 1Password.com/Clary for 2 weeks free. Today's sponsor is BetterHelp. Now, hear me out. If you magically had an extra hour in a day, and I know sometimes that's the only time we get to ourselves, what would you do with it? Maybe you would catch up on sleep. Maybe you'd hit the gym. Maybe you'd finally get into that book that you've been eyeing. We're always wishing for more time. But what if we focused on how we use the time that we have? Think about what really lights you up. What would change in your life if you made that a priority? Do you even know what that thing is? Well, therapy has been a game changer for me, not because of some terrible thing that's happened to me, but because it's helped me figure out what matters, how to manage tough emotions, how to be a better friend, a partner, business person, and just really person all around. So if you're even a little curious about therapy, if you want to help think through what matters to you, what to prioritize, how to live your life, try BetterHelp. It's totally online and works around your crazy schedule. No awkward waiting rooms. Just get matched with a licensed therapist and start making the most of the time you've already got. Learn how to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/successpod today to get 10% off your first month. That's betterhelp.com/successpod.
Introducing WonderSuite from Bluehost.com, the tool that makes WordPress wonderful for everyone. Website creation is hard, but now with Bluehost, you can answer a few simple questions about your business and goals, and the WonderSuite tools will automatically lay out your WordPress website or store in minutes. Seriously. From there, you can customize your design, pick your brand colors, and add blocks. No custom theme or coding required. You'll get content suggestions that you can keep or revise. And with Yoast SEO built in, we automatically help you get found in search engines. From step-by-step guidance to suggested plugins to an AI-powered help bot, our built-in tools make WordPress wonderful for everyone. Whether you're a beginner or a pro, you can join over 2 million Bluehost users. Go to bluehost.com/wondersuite. That's bluehost.com/wondersuite.
A lot of guys do this, but a lot of guys have been doing it for like 10, 15 plus years. And I think I even saw one of your Instagram videos about how when you started, it was like a couple months ago. It was not long ago.
Months ago, I had the idea.
Yeah, I know. And I know you have like a really good circle of other people like in your network. And that's probably a good lesson as well that have done this before and whatnot. Probably learned some lessons from those guys as well. But you spun this up so quick. So what what I want to fucking understand. No, but like in a good way, not in like it hasn't worked out. It's like
it's worked out wonderfully.
It's worked out exceptionally well because I follow this now and I follow what you're building and I saw the you know, we'll try and keep this evergreen as we can, but like I saw what you just did last week in Miami and like the caliber of people, because I know some of the guys that pay to go to these things and they're not stupid people.
That are
coming out to this. So, I mean, it's just impressive how quick you build this out. So I'm trying to understand how you built this business so quickly versus a lot of people that struggle starting something from scratch. 3 months and what you've achieved in 3 months is not normal. So there's a lot of lessons and experience there that allowed you to do this. But what do you think that was?
Execution. A lot of people spend a lot of time frozen.
Yeah.
And spend a lot of time thinking about it. I get in there and I just start throwing punches. Like, I'm going to learn Kung Fu in the middle of this fight. Like, I'm going to learn, you know what I mean? And so I got the idea. This is what happened. I was talking to my good friend, Wes Watson, and he was driving me crazy for like 2 months. He was like, bro, you got to do coaching. You got to teach business. You got to teach entrepreneurship. This is your zone of genius. So many people will benefit from this. I'm like, Wes, shut the fuck up. Like, what am I, an online coach? Like, what are you talking about? You know? And then I would be laying there thinking about it. I'd be like, you know what? Maybe he's right. Maybe it would be cool to build a community. And then I start to get this vision of like my entire journey from day one by myself to 9-figure exit. And I'm like, what if I built something that was tailored to everything that would have been beneficial to me along this journey?
Yeah.
And then I got excited about it. And then I remember I called him back. I was like, all right, teach me how to do this.
Yeah.
And he told me what he does. And then I spun it to what I thought it would be. And then I just got on my Instagram story. And I was like, hey, I'm going to take on a couple people to coach them for business and entrepreneurship. And if you're interested and you followed me, just shoot me a DM.
Yeah.
And I had a guy that was helping me with sales. In the next 2 days, we did like $100,000. That was the proof of concept.
Yeah.
It was that. It was right then where I was like, okay, this could work. Like,
were you building out your brand before that? You were building it out for a minute.
Yeah, because.
But no, there was nothing tied.
No, I wasn't trying to monetize it at all. I was just building a personal brand and, you know, attention is a commodity.
Yeah. Same reason I got this podcast going.
Same thing. Same, you know, shit, this is why we do it.
But, yeah.
And then as soon as that happened, I was like, all right, all in. And then we just set things up and just went for it.
I think it's because, you know, when you say like you had a 9-figure exit, there's a lot of people that do this that don't build businesses to that size.
Yeah.
So there's a ceiling on the advice you can get from somebody that's only achieved certain things.
Yeah.
Right? They've only dealt with so many problems. They haven't dealt with a 9-figure exit to a private equity or a family. Like, those are the things that not a lot of people deal with, because it's a rarity. It's a beautiful thing to do, but not many people get to that level. So I think that's, you know, what I'm alluding to is more people that have done it before. Those are the people that should be teaching. There's a lot of bullshit too.
And in those moments of consideration in the beginning of like, should I do this? Should I not do this? I, of course, went on. I was like, well, who else is doing it?
There's a lot.
But a lot of it's bullshit.
There's a lot of bullshit.
Like, I look at their stuff and I'm like, what have you actually done?
Yeah.
And a lot of these coaches are just that. They're coaches.
Like professional coaches.
Professional coaches. Yeah. You know what I mean? It's like the business teacher at the college who's never actually operated a business and makes $60,000 a year.
Yeah.
What the fuck am I going to learn from you?
Yeah.
You know, like, you read it out of the book, you heard it on a podcast, or you're regurgitating a lot of information.
You never lived it. It's like the lived experience.
You don't have the resume, homeboy.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? You don't have the lived experience to qualify you to be this. And so for that reason, I was like, you know, it'd be a little fun to come in and disrupt the space a little bit. If you watch my content, sometimes I get a little froggy on there, start calling people, not specifically, but I'm like, come on, man. You know what I mean? Like,
I know.
Too many fakes.
There are a lot of fakes out there. So, yeah. And I think that that's like when you, okay, let's just talk to people that are listening to this that are trying to find people to learn from. So you have a good group. How do you as a professional who's operated at really high levels, how do you sort of gauge whether or not you want to learn from somebody, take them on as a mentor? Like, what's your litmus test for your education inflow?
In my coaching program?
No, in your life. Like when you're looking to learn from somebody.
Oh, when I'm looking from someone, so like, I go for results.
Yeah.
I learn from people in specific niches on, do you have what I want? That's my question. Have you achieved the result that I'm looking to achieve? And do you have what I want? Like, I'm a fitness guy, so I want to learn about fitness and I want to work out. And like Wes Watson is jacked. He's fucking ripped.
Super jacked. Yeah.
He's an animal. Yeah. And I'm like, that's my guy. You know what I mean? So when I look at business, my business mentors today are billion-dollar dudes. You know what I mean? Like, I have a small handful of them that I sit with and spend all day on Instagram, and they're older cats and nobody really knows.
Those are the best kinds.
The best kinds, you know? And they're so out of touch, they don't know that they can charge me huge money for the conversation.
Exactly.
I get them for free, you know? But they've achieved the results.
Yeah.
And that's what the guides, I don't care if you sign up for my shit or not. But just please, whatever it is that you're looking to get coached or mentored on, make sure that the person that you're listening to or that you sign up with actually has had that experience and had the results. You wouldn't go get a fucking fat personal trainer.
No.
You're not going to do that. You'd be like, you're a fat piece of shit. Well, like, why am I going to listen to you? It's the same thing in business, you know?
Exactly.
It's the same, or any area of life, right?
It's too much. See, I think that social is great for a lot of things, but it allows a lot of people who are full of shit but just good marketers to sell shit to people that don't know any better.
No doubt.
Which is, I mean, that's horrible, but that's the reality. So I'm trying to, you know, part of this is hopefully, I've interviewed a lot of people, but hopefully a lot of the people on here are genuine, but I'm trying my best. But the point is you find good people that have actually done it before, and then you like pull out the ideas from them.
Yeah.
And that's really, I mean, that's how you learn. And it doesn't have to be, it could be a mastermind, whatever, it could be a podcast, but
totally.
I think it is. I love that. It's like you find somebody that's literally done the exact thing, or as close as possible to what you're trying to accomplish.
Yeah.
When you work with all these entrepreneurs, you said one of the main issues they have is basically removing themselves as the linchpin and the key man in the business. Yeah. What are some other major things that some of these people are running into, some big problems? The ones that you see repeat again and again and again. And it doesn't have to be business. Let's think about other things. It could be raising money. It could be having a good relationship because they're putting too much effort or energy in. Like, I'm sure that shit happens a lot too.
Yeah, we're all crazy.
Yeah, I know that.
And back to the coach thing, like, you don't want relationship advice from me. You know what I mean? Like, I'll teach you how to blow your business up, but like, I haven't been married in a successful marriage for 10 years or something. Like,
that's fair.
The guy you want. And so, you know, the mistakes that we all make – outside of key man, I don't know, you know, ignoring the personal development side of this. I think a lot of people are chasing. Let's unpack it. I think a lot of people are chasing success and wealth for the wrong reasons. And they think that the right amount of money, the right amount of material possessions, the right amount of status, attention, or whatever the achievement is going to fix a problem that they have that in all reality it won't. You know, I think that a lot of people chase wealth and success to fill a hole in their spirit, whatever that means for them. And the mistake that I see happen over and over again is sometimes people catch it in their lifetime and they get the money or they get the whatever it is that they thought would fix it. And they're like, fuck. This isn't as cool as I thought it was.
Mm-hmm.
This isn't everything I made it out to be. And so a lot of people ignore the fundamental truth that our internal condition, our happiness, our satisfaction, our serenity, our peace, our wholeness is not tied, like, the money can't make you happy. You know, I'd rather be fucking rich than poor.
Yeah.
I'm one of those guys. Like, yeah. I've been poor as shit, homeless, without money for food, and I've been fucking rich on my private jet flying to my yacht in the Bahamas. I'd much rather fucking the yacht in the Bahamas. But if it you can't buy your way out of your responsibility to do the internal work. And a lot of people get lost in this game and get lost in this process and ignore and evade their responsibility to do the internal work that's necessary for all of us. No one can escape that.
What does internal work look like? Is that, in your opinion, is it religion? Is it just, is it self-awareness, reflection, meditation? What is that personal work?
I think it's a recipe of a lot of those things.
Yeah.
For me, the foundation of it is spirituality. And then the things that have built around it are discipline, a non-negotiable code of conduct, a conviction to a moral code.
Mm-hmm.
These are the things that work for me. The things that make me okay and I keep a steady hand in any and all situations, good and bad, is a deep foundation in a relationship with a power greater than myself, God, prayer, meditation, reflection, and then this rule book of how I live my life.
Yeah.
I don't deviate for anything. It's non-negotiable. And then discipline around that.
I think that what any person's version of God does, like, to your point, it removes the selfishness.
Yeah.
And I think that too much selfishness and lack of, like you said, like, any sort of observance of somebody out, or an entity outside of who you are, I think that's a not the most positive way to live your life.
It's selfishness is a great word, and it's actually the core symptom of addiction, believe it or not, is selfishness and self-centeredness. Like, when you come in as an addict or an alcoholic in recovery, the number one thing this recovery process is supposed to do at first is tackle your selfishness and try to turn that around. That's why you see so many alcoholics, or even the basis of Alcoholics Anonymous is, we must give it away to keep it. I must help other alcoholics to maintain my own sobriety. And so that I think is a great example that on a broader spectrum affects so many people. And when you're in this game, if it's always about you, me, it really has to be about them. You know, and that's why I like to help people. That's why I like to, you know what I mean? And all these different avenues of, like, making it about service work and making it about the impact that we're leaving and making it about other people.
Yeah.
It gets us out of our selfish nature.
I also think that if you look at the average personality of an entrepreneur, just because they can be so hyper-focused, if you are selfish, the addictions don't end at drugs or alcohol. Like, you can be addicted to business, cheating, 100%. Lying, everything.
All of it.
And I think
totally
that
agree.
The person that can build a business is usually one step away from having a really hedonistic, selfish vice. Because
Most do,
because it takes a not normal person to put that much energy towards one thing.
Do you know what? And I don't talk about this as much as maybe I should.
I think there's a dark side to entrepreneurship.
Do you know how many people, like, I'd say it's 50-50 in my inner circle program. Half of them come to me and have these, like, scale problems, bottleneck, plateau, you know, tactical business stuff. And that's, like, the main focus. Some of them have that, but... Dude, we've had a solid handful of people get sober here.
Yeah.
Like, they came in. I got one guy who just celebrated 60 days of sobriety. I have and came in and was here for like 3 weeks and called me up and was like, dude, I got to talk to you. I was like, what's up? And he's like, I fucking drink and do coke on the weekends. And I was like, all right, cool. You know what I mean? Let's talk about it. Proud as shit of him. And then, you know, we have another woman who, sent me a screenshot of her sobriety tracker app yesterday, who's fucking 19 days sober from alcohol. You know, I've been struggling with alcoholism for a long time and came into Inner Circle and spilled guts and was like, you know, I get drunk every night. I get drunk every weekend. It's holding me back in business. It's holding me back in my life. got her hooked up with some resources and got her into some. So it's like, yeah, man.
Because dude, you're going like 1,000 miles an hour every day. Every day. Like, it's hard to shut off. 100%. It's hard to shut off. So you have alcohol to shut off, or you have anything to shut off. Anything that like forces you to remove the focus from the business. Because you know you gotta do it. But for a lot of people, if you're sober, it's almost impossible to do
100%.
It. So then you fall into all these different things. That's actually really interesting. I've never thought about that. But that's a really, really
So I end up start a business coach and end up a life coach pretty quickly.
Yeah, right. Well, listen, dude, it's the same. It's the same.
Yes, they're married together, and a lot of people don't realize that.
Yeah. Okay. So before we wrap this up, just wanted to give you the floor. Is there anything else that I didn't ask you about entrepreneurship, business, even addiction, that you think would be a really good lesson for the audience?
You know, my ethos is this, is that as long as you're breathing, there's still hope, and it's any man's game. You know, like you can never count anyone out. You can never count yourself out. You can never fucking give up, and we're never going to tap. Mm-hmm. If you had looked at me 16 years ago, 135 pounds, covered in track marks, warrants, I didn't have a single person that would answer my phone call. No way you're thinking, hey, this kid's going to go out there and change the lives of tens of thousands of people, build a big business, like all the stuff that I've been able to accomplish. And so it's, you know, if you're listening to this thing and your life is going wonderful and you have no pain in your life and you're not up against it in any way, and like, congratulations, it's unbelievable. And I couldn't be more happy for you. But if this message reaches you and you're up against it and the days are dark and it just feels like you're never going to get out of it, just don't fucking give up. Just keep going.
I love that. Okay. Yeah. Where should people reach out to you? Social, website?
Instagram is easiest, at Eric Spofford.
Okay, cool. Yep. And then the last question I ask everyone, you've had an incredible career, gone through many different seasons in your life. Mm. At this point in your life, what does success mean?
Impact. It's really, you know, this, make the money, get rich, get wealthy. But I, in as less of a morbid way as possible, think about my own death and think about what I will leave here when I'm gone frequently, daily. And for now, my definition of success is that I will leave my family set up and have created generational wealth, and that's cool. But they're really going to remember me by the impact I made in other people's lives. And so how can you take whatever it is you're good at, whatever gift God gave you, and use it to help other people?
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Looks like you need a vacation. Enter the 5-Hour Energy Where Will the Tide Take You sweepstakes. You could win a $10,000 dream beach vacation. Imagine jet setting off to a tropical paradise, having fun in the sun, or diving at a gorgeous reef. It's up to you. No purchase necessary. Go to 5HETIDE.com for official rules and to enter. That's 5HETIDE.com. Enter today. Ends June 30th, 2024.